89.5 FM, the sound of your city. Stream us anytime at www.ciut.fm.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to be speaking to Kim Ives of Haiti Liberté because, according to the Globe and Mail, the big guy is asking us to help in Haiti, and so happily we will do as we're asked, I assume. We need to know what's going on because the issue is allegedly we have to do something about the gangs, and I haven't been counting the years, but it's 5 or 6 years that I'm aware of this, that the whole issue is allegedly, quotes, gangs. I suspect that's a misidentification, therefore leading to policy problems. We'll also be talking later in the show about the recognition of Palestine by various governments of the West. The old title, Is It Too Little, Is It Too Late? But very important matter, not to be treated lightly, particularly in light of the ongoing massacres and aggression by Israel at despite being told by international bodies and practically everyone to bring about a ceasefire and a recognition of the Palestinians and a negotiated settlement so that we can have some stability. I don't know if anybody actually wants it. When they say stability, they mean their kind. I think we're joined by Kim Ives of Haiti Liberté. Are you there, Kim?
Hi, Phil. Yes, I'm here. Glad to be back on your show.
Boy, I'm glad to be talking to you because we have a big page headline here that says the U.S. asked Canada to help stabilize Haiti. And, of course, Canada always feels that it's not getting appropriate respect and attention. So now this government of Donald Trump, which hasn't shown a lot of regard for Canada, nonetheless, Canada seems to be pleased that they've been asked, and the subhead has to do with the old problem. Last time we spoke to you, and it says that they have to do something about defeating gangs. Talking to you in the past, we've addressed this thing of gangs. Personally, I don't like the term because the people running the place, my impression is, are kind of a gang. There's a gang, of course, in Washington, the boss gang, I guess. But then there's the. But why if you are sort of a blue collar type with your shirt open or whatever it is, you're the gang and the other guys are not? Could you, at any rate, could you tell us where we are in this crisis and why Canada's being asked?
Yes, it's exactly as you say, Phil. It, as the Creole proverb says, the thief. Crying thief. Yes, the actual gangs are the bourgeoisie of U.S., Canada, France, and Haiti, who have tried to criminalize, demonize, vilify the poor of Haiti, who finally are standing up, taking up arms, and saying, we are not going to live like this anymore. Mm-hmm. And hence, they have immediately become branded as criminals.
By the way, they'd be called Minutemen in the United States, right?
Yeah, Minutemen, or they'd be called freedom fighters if they were
patriots
fighting some U.S. regime change war. But no, they are fighting for sovereignty, for to break out of the U.S. imperialist system with its vassals, of which Canada is probably number one. And for years, Canada has always played second fiddle in Haiti. This piece that was in the Globe and Mail that I handed up the subscription fund so I could read it, you know, points out that really this is almost a blackmail of Canada. As a professor at Carleton College said, in many ways, the tariff negotiations may be held as a sort of Damocles over Canada's head so that they have to put some troops on the ground in Haiti. Because, again, as another Haitian proverb says, they don't know what saint to pray to. Basically, that's the situation of the Trump administration and Marco Rubio right now. They are going everywhere trying to get the OAS involved, get Brazil, get et cetera. And it's a little bit like Biden was doing, too. They just have created this mess in Haiti. Mm-hmm. I could say it's in many ways the Palestine of the Western Hemisphere. We had an article in Haiti Liberté to that effect. Mm-hmm. And there's just no easy solution, and they're trying to find it and recruit other people to go clean up the mess they've made.
It's a kind of, you know, pushing people towards a conflict where they realize this thing could. Doing the work for the master in Washington could be costly. We went through the exercise. Tell us what I remember. We were interviewing you, but they had this magic bullet. It was obviously a racialized idea and colonial system idea. Let's get the Kenyans of Africa to beat up on the who are English speaking. Let's send right. them to Quebec. Quebec. That's next. Send them to Haiti, and then obviously they'll take care of it, and it'll be kind of amongst themselves. These people are Africans. It struck me just an ugly colonial, and they thought it was going to be the magic bullet. So what happened to the Kenya rescue?
Right, a total disaster, a complete train wreck. That was called the Multinational Security Support Mission, MSS. And they couldn't get it through the Security Council. And for years, the U.S. has used the U.N. as its handmaiden, as we know. After the Second World War, the U.N. was really part of their worldwide structure, World Bank, IMF, Inter-American Development Bank, and, of course, the U.N., which they were controlling the world with. And in many ways, the world had to bow to that for decades. But really, in the past decade, we've seen the emergence of the new multipolar world, China, Russia, Brazil, South Africa, India, all beginning to stand up and say, no, we're not bowing to this anymore. You're not going to use the UN in that way. And so they couldn't get this mission through the Security Council because Russia or China would have vetoed it. And so they did this kind of ridiculous pantomime where they said, okay, we're going to send this mission. We're asking countries to voluntarily contribute to it, and we'll get the Security Council to give a benediction of it, to, you know, to bless it in some way. And Biden's ambassador at the time, or one of the sub-ambassadors, said, you know, this is a new way of protecting international peace and security. And, you know, the whole thing just didn't work at all because nobody wanted to send troops to it and nobody wanted to contribute to it. And so the U.S. and Canada a little bit were the main ones supporting this mission. They were supposed to have 2,500 troops. They only got about 1,000, is basically 700 Kenyans and then a few Guatemalans, Salvadorians.
What are these contractors, Bahamas. These Guatemalans? These...
Yeah, practically. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're just four countries, which the U.S. says, okay, we'll put up some money for you. And, you know, who knows what sort of quid pro quo is involved. But the long and short of it is the mission has lost three Kenyans and improved, quote-unquote, security, absolutely not at all. Now, the irony is, if you go to one of the so-called gang areas, which are basically armed neighborhood committees, they are committees which keep security and sanitation, schools and hospitals and whatever, such as they are, running in their zones, it's fine. But, you know, where there's the battle between this U.S. parachuted Council of Presidents, basically nine presidents, well, seven of them are voting, two are observers. So they have this nine-headed presidency structure, which Anthony Blinken concocted, with this prime minister who now is, wreaking havoc on these poor neighborhoods. Just two nights ago, there was a birthday celebration happening in the area of Simon Pelé, and they came in with the drones. This is Eric Prince, the scoundrel of Blackwater, who committed many massacres in Iraq. And now they are flying these drones around Haiti on behalf of this prime minister that this council has put in. And they killed at least 11, mostly children. These are 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds.
Using drones.
Maimed by these drones, yeah. I mean, it is. And then people who were going to the hospital after this attack were killed by the police. So we have a Gaza-like situation developing where they're massacring the poor population as they're armed with nothing more than balloons at a party and killing children. And, they claim this as a great victory. So this is the kind of absolutely ghastly atrocities that are being committed in Haiti by this U.S., Canada, Haiti, France installed Haitian government.
Yeah. Well, reading Haiti Liberté, I saw it was a very good account, and it said that the new formulation is just like watching a magic trick. They use the terminology involving international community and the UN and all that. But as I understand, actually they're bypassing it. And you use the word benediction. They just want to like a kiss the Blarney Stone. But they're putting more and more power in the hands of people like Eric Prince and this armed operation they've got going. I mean, is that right?
Well, they want everybody else
to pay for it. They would like.
Exactly.
They probably want money from Canada. If Canada said, here's the money, they'd probably say, that's fine. You could stay home.
Well, yeah. I think what you're referring to is on the 3rd of September, we had a piece which more or less outlines how the Trump administration, you know, they don't really care about form, about the face. I mean, the Biden, the Democrats, you know, they had this whole thing where, you know, we got to preserve a certain image. But, you know, Trump doesn't give a damn about that. So they're just going full speed ahead. And they've now proposed to the Security Council that this MSS be retired, sent home, and that they build a new force of 5,500 troops with 50 civilians.
Substantial,
which would deploy in Haiti. And the we published it in Haiti Liberté, the draft resolution they put before the Security Council, which essentially tries to do this absolutely juvenile shell game where they're trying to get the UN to pay for this and have, you know, the UN sign off on it. But it basically, for the listeners who aren't totally clear on how the UN works, the Security Council is essentially the executive arm of the UN. And when they send a peacekeeping operation, what's called a PKO, into a country, Now the UN pays for it out of their peacekeeping budget.
Mm-hmm.
And the UN Security Council oversees it. They're in charge of it. That's not the case with the MSF. They said, okay, U.S., you want to go do your thing, we'll say it's okay, but we're not part of it. So now Trump, in his, you know, what he thinks is a brilliant move, but actually is moronic, is trying to do this mumbo-jumbo bureaucratically to convince the U.N. to pay for this troop, the 5,500 troops that they're going to bring into Haiti. And who is it going to be? Well, Marco Rubio has this notion that he's going to resurrect the OAS as this kind of intervention force. Now, we remember 60 years ago what they did in the Dominican Republic, where essentially the U.S. Marines went in under the OAS flag and they, you know, mowed down neighborhoods. There was door-to-door fighting in Santo Domingo, in the El Conde neighborhood, and, you know, it was a big battle.
Yes,
the U.S. won. They were at the peak of their power then. But, you know, ever since, the OAS nations, even though they are, as Cuba says, the Ministry of Colonial Affairs, they don't want anything to do with these U.S. excursions into Latin America. They didn't involve themselves in Panama or Grenada or any of the other U.S. interventions. So I don't think it's going to fly. I think Rubio is as deluded as Trump. And so I don't think this whole, what they call this new force, the Gang Suppression Force, GSF.
Yeah.
And from what
the G, gang as a political term.
Gang, right, repeat, like Goebbels, you know, lie, something always remains.
It's sort of the way they treat Chicago or Los Angeles. It's
exactly.
By the way, isn't that a kind of a disturbing and easy sort of analogy that you kind of feel it in your bones? Listening to Trump, for example, in Arizona, you know, okay, we're fighting gangs. We're going to wipe them out in Washington, D.C. Then he's got Haiti, and he just uses the word gang, and everybody says, oh, yeah, okay, same problem.
Yep. No.
Pretty sick.
Very sick, and I think they're revealing themselves or shooting themselves in the foot. I don't know what metaphor to use, but when they go after Nicolas Maduro and say he's a terrorist, gang supporter, a drug trafficker. I mean, Nicolas Maduro, here's a guy who's fighting the gangs they claim he's heading, who's, you know, got by the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration's own memos, has nothing to do, in fact, with any drug trafficking, which is going up the Pacific Coast, not the Atlantic. You know, it's they're just showing themselves to be completely ham-fisted.
Yeah. Well, what about the – now, you say, are they going to take this to the OAS, or they're floating the idea? Has there been any
–
are we getting any kind of feedback or whatever? Because, by the way, at one point, only a few years back – the Trudeau administration here with Chrystia Freeland, who's now on her way out, they decided to pump up the OAS. They were going to be the ginger group and help the U.S. administration dominate. That kind of collapsed because they had a guy they had named him. Actually, as far as I know, Canada still regards this character that disappeared as the true president of Venezuela.
I mean, Guaido.
Guaido. The Guaido solution. But you know, the nasty part is these things disappear from but they're not dismissed. They simply disappear.
Yeah.
And you always wonder, are they going to reach in and pull this rabbit back out of the hat? What, you know?
Exactly. No, I think they do. A lot of these things, they don't work, and they just put them kind of on the side, on the bench, as it were, and then if they need, they trot them out again. Yes, what they're doing with the OAS, just to go on that, is OAS was sort of worked into this draft resolution put for the UN. And what Marco Rubio, who, as your Canadian listeners may or may not know, is basically the child of Cuban Gazanos who were based in Miami. He was involved, Pierce, and his family was involved in drug trafficking. He was, I don't know, living in a house with a guy who was a big drug trafficker. So, you know, I think the guy has a very seamy background from appearances. But what he wants to do is take the OAS and sort of mix them in to the UN structure using various OAS projects. For instance, there's an OAS project called Secure Haiti, which is basically a 10-year training and mentoring program to strengthen the Haitian National Police. So what they're saying is that the OAS is going to, you know, construct operational facilities and security infrastructure and be involved in joint planning and oversight operations, all these ways to kind of get the OAS in the picture so that they're part of this UN effort. So they're just playing with these structures, and I don't think it's going anywhere. From, as I say, as we were told, this proposal, this proposed resolution that they gave at the UN has not even been entered into negotiations with, you know, Russia, China, other nations who are going to look at it with a very a doubting eye.
Mm-hmm. Well, this phenomenon, I'm really glad you used the term armed neighborhood committees. Mm-hmm. I hope we can get that. We'll start italicizing or something so we learn to say that, or maybe we could call them Minutemen. But what is clear to me is how resilient and obviously sophisticated they are. And of course, by using a slur like gang, it's, you know, that sounds kind of easy to deal with. But could you talk about their resilience? And Mr. Cherizet, because, you know, people think, okay, well, I heard about this guy, but, you know, a year has gone by and he's probably finished, right? That doesn't seem to be the case with these groups. So
no, not at all. No, his stock has risen considerably. And what people have to understand, to simplify it a little bit, is essentially the Haitian state abdicated any role in supporting the neighborhood. They just completely cast them off to the side, put them out of the picture, and engaged in their own self-enrichment. And in these neighborhoods, these armed committees grew. Now, some of them were indeed involved in criminal activities, kidnapping, theft, various forms of criminality. And what grew in response to them were these sort of vigilante committees, which said, okay, we don't want you bad guys in our neighborhood, so we're going to keep you out. And that was what Cherizier was. He was a cop, a stellar cop, who basically formed his own defense committee in his neighborhoods. And they fought with the criminal gangs for about 3 or 4 years, from 2020 to about 2023-24. And all the time, though, he was saying, listen, I'm fighting these guys. They're being used by the bourgeoisie to put me down because I have a revolutionary program. But basically, they're my allies. I want to win them over, much like Mao Zedong had to try to win over the Kuomintang of Chiang Kai-shek to carry out the revolution, drive out the Japanese imperialists in the 1940s. So this was his idea, which we were kind of doubtful of at Haiti Liberté. We said, oh, this is never going to work, but it did. And they drove out the first U.S. puppet, a guy called Ariel Henry, who was the prime minister of the country in February of 2024. And, he's gradually sort of marshaling these guys. And Mao Zedong's army had a lot of bandits in it.
Exactly.
You know, had people who were had to be reformed.
Of dubious dubious background, yes.
Right, right. And so he's done his best, from what we can observe, in trying to reform and, you know, discipline these guys and get them to stop, you know, like, just as an anecdote, at one point, a nun called me and she said, oh, you know, this woman had some kids kidnapped and, you know, can you call, you know, and I called Sherry here and I said, you know, what's going on with that? And 3 days later, you know, the kids were all released. And he basically got together his vivant sum committee, as they're called, and he said, listen, we can't have this kidnapping going on. And they all basically surrounded the guy who was involved among them and said, listen, if you do this, it's going to be fatal for you. You got it. And he released them. So this is the kind of process that's going on. It's a messy, uneven process, but basically these armed neighborhood committees are becoming more and more conscious patriotically, politically, ideologically, as this struggle goes forward.
Yeah. Now, do they have, Mr. Sherzay and other, if they, you speaking programmatically, do they have it sketched, it basically blocked out what they want, and is there anybody engages them?
Well, it's interesting. People who speak Creole can go to the Haiti Liberté website, and I did an interview with Sherry Zye and another.
Yes, a long interview, very interesting. Go on, please go on.
Yeah, and another Haitian journalist about 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago. And I asked him that because they formed their coalition of armed neighborhood committees into a party, a political party. So I asked him in that interview, I said, do you have a program? Do you have a code of conduct? Do you have, you know, rules? You know, how is it structured? And he thought for a minute, he paused a beat or two, and he said, well, you know, at the current time, I can't exactly explain everything that's going on there, but yes, we are building something. And so, you know, I more or less have learned from Sherry Zye. I've been talking to him now for about 4 years. I met him in April of 2021. But, you know, what he says, it's pretty much cash. You know, he speaks the truth. If he can't tell you something, he's not going to lie to you. He's just going to say, I can't say that. You know, I can't tell you.
So. People who are familiar with Haiti know the name Duvalier. Most people start with Papa Doc. And then there was the great, you know, flowery, liberal, progressive name, Aristide. And then Clinton embraced and then dropped and then embraced and then dropped and then kicked. And what has become of these forces? Where are they?
Well, you know, in ways, I've heard the saying, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And in a way, Aristide reflects an early leader of the Haitian Revolution. In the Haitian Revolution, which lasted from 1791 to 1804, I mean, the fighting part of it, there was a leader called Toussaint Louverture, who many people may know. And Toussaint was a great military leader, strategist, had a lot of, amazing victories. But he never was fighting for independence. He always saw, he was basically a neo-colonialist. He was saying, we Haitians who are here can run this colony for France better than when they send their commissaire from Paris.
Yes.
So let us do it. And Napoleon basically said, well, no, we're not going to do that. And that was the colonial period, not neo-colonial.
I'm glad you mentioned it. I saw the letter. People should read it. Toussaint's letter to Bonaparte, saying, yep. Hey, listen, I'm a good guy. I did my best. You shouldn't be treating me this way, et cetera. And exactly. I don't think they know that he wrote that letter. It was a heartfelt letter. It was a compelling argument.
Yeah. So he basically never, was a revolutionary in the sense that we're going to take independence. It was his lieutenant, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, who said, forget these French. It's never going to work. We just got to, make our own independence. And that was the first independent nation of Latin America, the first Black Republic. Mm-hmm. They really were the beginning of the liberation movements that took place around the world over the next two centuries. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, Aristide's model, the person he follows is Toussaint. And he was always trying to get in the good graces of Washington. And finally, his party is, even though Aristide seems to be practically in the background now. But his party is totally part of this U.S.-installed hydra that they put in place and has, played a very negative role in recent years. They are essentially an arm, one of the puppet handmaidens of imperialism right now, even though imperialism...
So they're still on the shelf and perhaps might be used. They put them on...
Oh, yeah.
They could be...
Oh, absolutely. No, they are being used. There was a Fahmy Lavalas president. Basically, these presidents rotate. And for 6 months, Leslie Voltaire was the representative of the Lavalas family party, Aristide's party, was the president of Haiti and carrying out all the imperialist... operations. And in fact, he was responsible for putting in place the prime minister now, who may survive this council, which is supposed to expire on February 7th, 2026, when they were supposed to have had elections. But there are no elections that are going to take place in Haiti in the next 6 months. So basically, Aristide's party has fallen into ignominy despite its role in carrying out a political revolution in 1990 and again in 2000. But really what's happening now, Phil, is a social revolution. These are people who are not saying, listen, we want the power of the state. No, they're saying we want to take control of the economy. We want to change ownership of the means of production. Mm-hmm. We want the land, the factories, the ports, the infrastructure.
That would be sovereignty.
Yeah, that would be sovereignty.
And self-respect.
So that's what's involved, yeah. So in many ways, we see a kind of a rhyming process with the initial Haitian Revolution of 1804, where today it began as a political bid for power. Under Aristide, it was smashed twice with coup d'etats and foreign interventions. And now the people have taken up arms in their hand, and they're saying, okay. And sometimes I describe Charizier like that. He's basically Aristide with a gun.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually, it's one of those things. You look at it one way as dark and the other way as light. But frankly, the fact that, it's been some time since we spoke to you, and what I find encouraging is that all the elements that were positive or hopeful some time back remain there because with the Kenyan operation and the little and various manipulations of the UN and all that, they were going to solve the problem that they called gangs. And they seem to be creating an attractive and healthy response that they're not going to be able to dictate to.
Right, exactly. It's like the fox with his leg caught in the noose. The more he struggles, the tighter it grows. And it's a little bit like the situation in Israel-Gaza. The more they show their teeth and total genocidal nature to the world and to the Palestinian people, the more they create recruits for Hamas. The same thing's happening in Haiti. The more the empires... or the U.S. empire with its vassal empires comes in and smashes people like they did two nights ago, blowing up a birthday party and killing tons of little kids. The pictures are just totally horrible to see, these babies lying on the ground all blown apart. radicalizing people.
Yes. Well, that I'm really glad that Haiti Liberté exists. It is brilliant work. Your work is terrific, and we're very glad, Tim Ives, we could be talking to you. We're going to get back, ask you to come back sometime soon, because Canada's going to have to make up its mind whether it's going to be a player or not, and we need you to explain to us. Thank you very, very much for joining us, Tim.
Well, thank you, Phil. Thank you for your work, and keep the faith, hold the flame of liberation high up there in the cold northern regions.
Well, you make us feel better, which is rare in talking about the imperialist world these days. So thank you very, very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. This is CIUT, The Taylor Report, 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor. We have a little Bob Dylan, or big Bob Dylan, it doesn't matter what size it is. He was singing at Farm Aid the other night. This is a very kind of cultural moment, right? Bob Dylan and Neil Young and Willie Nelson helping farmers who are in big trouble in the United States. And then the next day you had the Trump show in Phoenix. So I guess we'll use the word culture wars. That everybody says it's not, but there's certainly some type of conflict. And Mr. Jones doesn't know what's happening, and I know I don't. So we'll listen to Bob Dylan. We'll be back.